south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, here's something I think a lot of you guys and gals are going to be interested in. On this show, we like to talk about how that gringo advantage works for you in having a business down here in Latin America. And we talk about just how strong that gringo advantage is off the tourist trail, of course. But you know, there are touristy destinations down here that aren't gringoized. Oh sure, there's a few gringos stomping around in any faraway place that's got something to offer. But for the moment, let's talk about those low-volume tourist places, the ones that are not well-known by gringos, and because of that, not so frenzied, meaning much more laid-back and obviously much less expensive than places like Costa Rica. Basically, I'm talking about places that have tourists, but the vast majority of them are not speaking English. And that's one good sign that you're not on the gringo tourist trail. So let's talk about that Latin American tourist trail in regards to gringo business startups in those places. So once again, I repeat, when you're on the middle class, upper middle class, or wealthy Latin American tourist trail, that's a whole different story. And if you start a business in one of those areas, your gringo advantage will be alive and well, even if you get into a business that looks like it shouldn't have a chance under normal circumstances. And you'd be surprised at just how many gringos and first world people go against that conventional gringo business advice that's a given, especially in first world tourist destinations like Costa Rica and Panama. And they start businesses that are an uphill battle all the way, like hotels, bed and breakfasts, restaurants, bars, etc. But surprisingly enough, somehow, and I've seen this quite often, quite a high percentage of these guys seem to beat the odds. And remember, I'm not talking about the gringo tourist trail. I'm talking strictly about the Latin tourist trail, especially if you're the only gringo in the neighborhood with such a business, and your competition, no matter how much there is of it, are the mediocre locals who have no idea about customer service and are not into the details. Which brings me to an interesting email I just received. And I'll paraphrase it a bit here and add my comments, of course. And it's entitled, "The Gringo Advantage Plus a Bad Idea Equals a Great Big Question Mark." And in this case, since we're talking about a bad business idea in a Latin tourist area, a bad idea can actually become a success. And here's a case in this email that it's a bit more complicated, since the mix of tourists in the place he's talking about, Granada, Nicaragua, is of course mostly Latin tourists, but also lately an influx of first world ecotourism too. The fact is, a lot of disgruntled gringos are spilling into Nicaragua now because it's a lot cheaper than their original destination, a lot less crowded, a lot less dangerous, and more laid back. Their original destination, of course, being Costa Rica, right next door to Nicaragua. It turns out that so many gringos and first world expats who've set up shop in Costa Rica for years are now flooding into Nicaragua that even International Living is pushing it now. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. Now, if you do happen to visit Granada, Nicaragua, which is a very cool town, you'll see mostly Latin tourists because it is a tourist town, and a steady stream of first world ecotourists. And whether you know it or not, first world ecotourists are a different breed of tourists altogether. They're much more educated and worldly than your average Disneyland or Vegas tourist. They've been to all the big-time, high-profile tourist destinations in the world, and they're most often laid-back, quiet, sometimes introspective, and definitely the adventurous type, since you find them trudging through places that are on the U.S. State Department's hit list. That's hit with an S. And they pride themselves on having a very small impact. That is, a very small tourist footprint, too. The fact is, if you talk to these guys, to a person, they'll tell you they just don't like high-volume first-world tourist sites like Cancun and Costa Rica. They've been there, done that, and are sick of it. For a lot of reasons, which I don't even have to go into here, because you know them already. So the question is, what if a gringo expat tries to set up a business in one of these places? Well, I'll tell you. If there's enough of these guys and gals around at a tourist destination, they're the ones that can actually end up being your marketing client target. Meaning the locals, even the upscale locals, aren't your target at all. For example, if there's quite a few eco-tourists around, they're going to want organic, non-GMO, vegetarian restaurants. And they'll need camping and backpacking outfitters, too. That means portable stoves, portable water purifiers, hiking gear, pup tents, mini solar battery chargers, not to mention street bikes and mountain bikes and kayaks and all the gear that takes. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. So let me get on with this email. He starts with the usual, "Hey Johnny, I just came across your podcast a few days ago, and as I listened, that first time, I got quite a kick out of the results you shared from that study in Spain about how few non-student adults read. Your conclusion, quote, that it's not a good idea to open a bookstore in any country. Now, as it happens, I was going through my back stock of books from my semi-new, almost 3 years, I guess, it's not really new anymore, bookstore that I own here in Granada, Nicaragua. And it is true that if you look at the literacy rates for the country and the region, which, by the way, I contend are extremely optimistic numbers compared to the reality, that opening a bookstore like this would seem like an insane endeavor, just like you said in your podcast. Now, if you factor in how many of these Latins actually read, things look pretty grim. It certainly wasn't my intention to open a bookstore. I was looking for surf when I got held up in Granada. What I mean by that is I got held up with some work that necessitated that I stay in one place for a few days. Though, actually, I was held up in a masked man sense of the word, too, during those few days. Well, as it turned out, I finished the books I had with me and couldn't find anything else and saw an opening, a business opening, as well as countless other opportunities. And I went for it, the bookstore, that is. Fortunately for me, it turned out to be a less crazy idea than it would seem on paper. What I mean is it worked for me. Then he says, by the way, I've listened to all of the iTunes accessible episodes of the Expat Files, and I'm guessing you're in Central America, but it sounds like you pretty much make the rounds. I hope when you're coming through Granada next that you'll stop in and say hello at my bookstore. I'm really enjoying the podcast. I also got a big kick out of your telling the story of Jimmy Coco. In fact, we sell his products in the bookstore, and we use his cocoa at home. Great stuff. Then he signs off, "Keep it up, Johnny. Troy." Oh, and by the way, I should mention here, for those of you who might happen to be in the Granada, Nicaragua area, the bookstore is called Lucha Libro, loosely translated as the book fight, whatever that means. And like I said, it's in Granada, Nicaragua, one block east of the Central Park, a half a block north on Avenida Cervantes. Then Troy mentions that you shouldn't look for the street sign because there isn't one. Typical Latin America, you know? And of course, he's on Facebook and he's got a website, so if you're really interested, just drop me a line and I'll send him off to you. And here's my first reaction to this. First, it's absolute proof that you have to actually be down here, looking around with boots on the ground to see the opportunities. Because remember what Troy said in his email? Just 3 or so days into his adventure in Granada, he saw a definite need for a bookstore and a few other business opportunities, too. 3 days, imagine that. Now, you might be surprised, but I'm not. I've heard that story a number of times. Not about the bookstore, but about other businesses. In so many other Latin towns like that. So again, Granada's not exactly on the high-volume tourist trail at all. It just happens to be a nice, quaint, colonial little city, a lot like Antigua, Guatemala, only smaller, much smaller, with its own very beautiful, historic colonial buildings, still intact. However, me, I personally much prefer Antigua. Why? Because it's in the Altiplano, and it's got that spring-like weather all year round, and Granada, Nicaragua can be very hot, meaning it would be very tough having a chocolate candy shop there. You'd spend a fortune on air conditioning. But if you're in Antigua, you have no air conditioning bill. Just thought I'd give you a little comparison there. Anyway, I personally know a lot about bookstores in Latin America since I used to spend a lot of time searching those places out. In fact, one of the first things I'd do when I got to a new town was to ask around for the English bookstore. And since I was nearly always off the gringo tourist trail, I'd rarely find a decent one. And of course, that was before Kindle or any kind of ebooks. Recently, little by little, I've ditched my pulp paper library. It's just too heavy to haul around. And for the last couple of years, I've done exclusively ebooks myself. Now, related to this, I know a couple of guys who own bookstores in tourist towns that are not gringo tourist towns, Latin tourist towns, who, like Troy has figured out in Granada, there's enough of a steady trickle of eco-gringo tourists to keep the place going. In fact, the bookstore owners down here tell me their clients are almost exclusively those type of gringos. And though they have a Spanish section in their bookstore, it's the eco-tourist gringos that keep the place open. And another thing I've found out about bookstores in Latin America, almost none of them make a go of it completely by selling books. They need to have something else to sell. A lot of something else. And by the way, nearly all of them buy and trade used books too. So a gringo walks in with his copy of the latest Stephen King and he gets a $2 or $3 credit on the purchase of a new or used book in the same bookstore. But what gringo bookstore owners have found is that they need to have more to draw on the customers, like a small coffee shop, lunch counter, a couple of internet stations with Skype, car or bike rental, a small tourist agency, or even a cigar bar. Something other than just plain old books. In fact, about a year and a half ago, I was in such a bookstore talking to the gringo owner, and I said, look, when are you guys going to start renting or selling e-books? I said to the guy, let's face it, sooner or later, no one's going to want traditional paper books anymore, and your eco-tourism clients will be the first to figure that out. And a lot of them have already. For one, they're bulky and heavy. I mean, come on, you have to kill trees to make books, right? And don't give me that recycle bit either. You still have to kill plants and trees. But this guy was an old hippie, a kind of a Luddite gringo who came down 30 years ago. And he just didn't see the point in having ebooks. And you know, a while ago when I first mentioned that to him, I didn't know anybody who had a Kindle down here either. But nowadays, there are at least 20 different ebook readers, not to mention Palm devices that can read ebooks. People are slowly but surely switching over to them. So anyway, my advice to anybody who's got a traditional old bookstore, your next value-added component has got to be ebooks. And funny enough, just a few weeks ago, I was talking about this very subject at a coffee shop to an eco-tourist type guy who actually did bring his Kindle down, backpacking through Central America with that thing, and guess what else he had with him? A solar charger for that thing. See what I mean about eco-tourists? They need that stuff. Anyway, being that he hadn't been down here long, maybe about a month and a half, when I mentioned that ebook idea to him, he said, you mean you'd go into a bookstore and order your ebooks right off of Amazon there? Well, I can do that from a Wi-Fi in a hotel or a cafe internet. I said, no, you don't get it. You stock like 10,000 or 20,000 ebooks on the hard drive on your computer in your bookstore. And you just sell the downloads for a buck or two apiece. To which he said, of course, that means you gotta buy all those books first and load them on your computer, right? And by the way, I was with expat Eddie at the time, and he broke out laughing and said, man, obviously you haven't been in Latin America too long, have you? Then Eddie pointed to the building right across the street from the coffee bar and said to the guy, you know what that building is over there? That's the police station, and right next door, the courthouse. And you see that little kiosk on the corner right between those two buildings? Well, if you walk over there, you can buy the very latest in pirated music, pirated DVDs, and pirated software. And you could buy reprogrammed, stolen smartphones, too. And I'll bet you they have a few Kindles with no serial numbers on them either. 25 cents on a dollar, that's the going rate. Then Eddie said, by the way, I'd hide that Kindle a little better if I were you. Why'd you buy a white one? When it comes to tech stuff, when you're in Latin America, you should always go with the neutral colors. Then the guy said, you mean they're selling pirated stuff right out in the open? Right next to the courthouse and the police station? Then Eddie laughed again and said, man, you're really a babe in the woods. That kiosk over there with the pirated stuff is sitting on the best real estate in town. Their best customers are the cops, the lawyers, the businessmen, and the politicians. Just have a look at that place for a few minutes and watch the suits come up and buy stuff. You think they're buying Doritos and gummy bears? Nope. They're checking out the latest DVDs. Pirated, of course. At a buck a piece, 3 for $2.50. Then Eddie winked at him and said, hey man, this is Latin America. You'll figure it out. Now, as a disclaimer here, I'm not advocating you come down here and buy pirated stuff. But the fact is, there are many situations down here when you want to rent a movie and you really can't find anything but the pirated ones. And yes, you've probably seen news up in the first world about the war against pirating. Well, it's just a show for the media that no one really takes seriously down here. Yeah, they bust a few warehouses once or twice a year, and the cops and the politicians get a photo op. But after work, the cops and the politicians are back on the streets buying pirated stuff for themselves, their wives, their kids, and their girlfriends too. Just like the so-called war on drugs, it's lost. Now, I'm not sure how they handle pirating up in the first world. I guess they're pretty strict about it. But down here, the war on pirating was lost before they even announced the first battle. And I'll bet you a Bitcoin that there isn't a single judge, policeman, or politician in all of Latin America whose house isn't loaded with pirated DVDs and clothes and software and stuff. All right, I don't want to stray too far here. Now, since we've been talking a lot about Nicaragua, in this show and last week's show too, you might think since I highlighted that very nasty article about water pollution and garbage in general in Nicaragua, that I don't recommend the place. Well, you'd be wrong. I really do recommend Nicaragua for those who like hot weather. For one thing, it's very inexpensive. It's got a pretty low crime rate. It's got some very beautiful cities and scenery, except Managua, the capital. That's another it-hole with an S. And basically, you only have to go there to fly in and out. Anyway, it's also got a very small population for its size, so there's plenty of room. And believe me, there's some very good business opportunities there, too. And your gringo advantage is in full gear. Except, I should mention, close to the Costa Rican border. That's a place where hordes of disgruntled gringos who've had it with expensive, gringo-saturated, and increasingly dangerous Costa Rica are slipping on through and testing the waters in Nicaragua. And a great many of them are loving it and staying there. That is, if they have any capital or wealth left after being clipped by Costa Rican attorneys, real estate agents, not to mention the government and all the insincere, jaded locals that you eventually realize, or maybe not, are only looking at you, a supposedly wealthy gringo, as a dollar sign, not as a person. So, as you might have figured, where hordes of gringos come, prices and land values soar, as well as the number of rip-off artists. But so far, the contamination of the gringo effect is only seen close to the Costa Rica-Nicaraguan border. And though it's spreading, it'll take some time. And what I said last week about Nicaragua and all the water pollution problems and garbage disposal problems, well, you know, that applies to everywhere in Latin America, except maybe for Chile. That's one country that has a pretty good handle on environmental issues, for a Latin American country, but it's just so damn first world expensive. What with the high taxes and Big Brother moving in, I just don't recommend it. Unless you just want to go on a nice vacation, or you have a ton of money, and don't mind being fingerprinted and caught on camera more and more. But since we're talking about doing business this time in Nicaragua, I have yet another very interesting email coming from a gringo doing business there. Now, I have to preface this one by saying that this email comes from one of my newer friends, a guy that took my expat wisdom seminar about a year ago. And his is kind of a strange situation in that he lives in Texas most of the time and he flies into Nicaragua once or twice a month to keep an eye on his two fledgling businesses. One, a chartered fishing boat that he owns and docks down there. And two, a small local independent fast food restaurant. Now, his two businesses are located in another place I highly recommend for those of you who are considering Nicaragua, the town of San Juan del Sur, which is kind of considered the busiest beach spot in Nicaragua, and it's on the southwestern coast. And when I say the busiest, that's kind of a misnomer because there's only about 18 to 20,000 people in the whole place, and growing because little by little it's catching on, and for a number of strong reasons, not the least of which is that they've got pretty good surfing there. Not to mention it's not polished, glitzy, and expensive. In other words, even your basic first world fast food joints haven't hit there yet. And that says a lot, believe me. It's small and not nearly overrun with gringos enough to be too developed and expensive. And three, you can enjoy that pristine beach life if that's what you're looking for. But that's not for me, except when I'm on vacation. A couple of weeks of hot beach sun is about all I can handle a year. I like the Altiplano, but that's me. However, if you were into beach bumming it, this is the perfect place. Some people, I should say a lot of people, just love that lifestyle. And by the way, I know this phrase might be overused, but I have to say it's pretty much exactly like Costa Rican beach towns used to be like 25 or 30 years ago, till all the gringos rushed in and you know what happened next. Now, I'm hesitant to use the words getting in on the ground floor, because like one wise investment guy once told me, he says anyone who uses that term getting in on the ground floor in a business sense has already missed the boat on the ground floor deals by a few years. Since like that old wise owl told me, you don't even know you're on the ground floor because there aren't any floors built yet. But that aside, I know Central America and all these areas pretty well. And when I talk about the beach town of San Juan del Sur, Nicaragua, it is like Costa Rica was about 25 or 30 years ago. Now, you might say, what does Johnny know about Costa Rica 25 or 30 years ago when he only came down a little over 20 years ago? Well, I've mentioned a number of times that I've been down here in Latin America over 20 years. And when I say that, I mean 20 years of continuous Latin American living. And in all that time, I've been back to the States a grand total of less than 10 days. And that was maybe 15 years ago, back when first world life was much freer, simpler, and easier. What I mean is before 9/11. And you know, when I tell that story, people say to me, "Wow, Johnny, only 10 days in 20 years? You must have really had an important reason for that trip." In fact, most people guess that I went back for a wedding or a tragedy in the family or something like that. But in reality, it was nothing that serious. I laugh about it now because the reason that I went back wouldn't hold water today. The fact is, I went back because I had a list of things I could not buy down here in Latin America for love or money. I mean, basically, 15 or 18 years ago was before Amazon was shipping around the world, before Craigslist or any of that organized internet stuff. Oh yeah, back then you could buy things and get them shipped all over the first world, but not to Latin America. Not without a great deal of hassle anyway. There'd be ground charges and freight charges and air charges and aduana charges and import duties, etc., etc. Not to mention, things shipped from the first world tended to go missing. Just ask any long-term expat. He's had that experience, believe me. At least they did back then before UPS and FedEx got here. And back then, my shipping experiences weren't very good either. I think I sent for two packages, and one of them got here okay, though it took about a month and a half. And the other one, well, you could see it was open and crushed. It was a shipment of vitamins and supplements, and yes, things were missing. I can just picture the guy from the aduana who swiped my green stuff from Gary Null. I wonder what his wife and kids said at the dinner table that night, and they opened up that stuff and tried to eat it, or fertilize the plants with it, or whatever. In that respect, gringos who are educated and tuned in live in a different universe than the average Latin person. And by the way, the average Latin person has about a 6th grade education, remember? Which perfectly qualifies him for a government job, high level or otherwise. But that's another story. So 15 years or so ago, I went back to the States for 10 days just to get a bunch of stuff, including musical equipment, all of which these days is available in every medium and large city throughout Latin America. And at pretty much the prices you pay up in the first world, too. But I digress as usual. But you still might be asking, what does Johnny know about Costa Rica way back when, 25 or even 30 years ago? In reality, the first few times that I was down to Central America, I went to Costa Rica because I had a couple of friends and contacts there. And that all started back in 1985, about 28 years ago. So I was there in person, so I know exactly what it was like back then in the beach towns. They really were a lot like San Juan del Sur, Nicaragua, is right now. Sleepy, laid back, cheap, and a lot of fun. Let's talk about the business side of being in a town like that. Now, for those of you expat wannabes and gonna-bes who are looking for a business opportunity with very little capital investment, you really should pay attention to the following email. So let me paraphrase this a little bit. But first, let me make a disclaimer. I almost always advise against expats opening up restaurants in gringo tourist areas because there's just too much damn gringo competition. However, like I've explained in past shows, there are certain cases where a gringo restaurant can beat the pants off the local competition. So let me get on with this email and you'll get the picture a little better. And this one comes, like I said, from Brandon, who came to my Expat Wisdom Seminar about a year ago and who owns two small businesses in Nicaragua by long distance. Most of the time, he lives in Texas. He starts out, "Hey Johnny, I hope all is well in paradise. I've decided to sell my small fast food restaurant in San Juan del Sur. Believe me, it will be a perfect opportunity for an expat to have a turnkey business immediately up and running." And I said turnkey business, not turkey business. Now, here are a few of the details. It's a small fast food type restaurant in the heart of San Juan del Sur, and I'm currently the absentee owner and can't devote the time into making it successful. Basically, you're buying the location, the local employees' knowledge, the licensing, the equipment, etc., to have a fully functional food spot overnight. I got into this deal with a partner who bailed on me, so I've been keeping it afloat to the best of my ability while only visiting once every few months. If the place had some kind of a personality and some marketing, there's no doubt it would be a big success. The location is perfect, the food is good, the staff is 100% trustworthy, and I'm asking only $9,000 for the whole thing. And I'm willing to negotiate or trade vehicles, bitcoins, partial land, etc. Now, with a little food experience and some gringo work ethic, anyone could put the other locally owned fast food places out of business. In fact, it's really an expat's dream. Where else in the world can you buy a fully functional business for less than 10 grand? Now, here's the thing. I don't have any monthly numbers on the place. Unfortunately for the Nika crew that I have, they don't have the ability to keep accurate books. Because I only get down to it once every couple of months, a friend of mine has been keeping an eye on the place, and I haven't asked him to keep books since he's helping me for free. Like I mentioned, the buyer is paying for the ease of entering the market, acquiring the equipment with no downtime. With the Christmas season kicking up, now is the perfect time to get in. And of course, I'm trying to keep this simple. No long fancy contracts, no brokers, cash only or trade, etc. And here are a few more of the details. Currently, there are two employees, which is plenty. And when the new owner takes over, he'll be there all the time, so he can be one of those too. Now, as for the competition, there are only a few other taco places that compete. It's a fast food, so one would walk up, order, then walk away with the food. There are a few bar stools, but really nowhere to sit, to be waited on, and enjoy a meal. And I can tell you, low-cost food is a big deal to backpackers and people just coming through town. And that's who our targets are. With San Juan del Sur being a low-cost beach town, that's the kind of people coming through. If the new owner was willing to put on a late night shift, they could just clean up with the bar crowd, since the place is on the town's main strip. Currently, it has a very small menu. Made-to-order breakfast tacos with homemade tortillas, beef and chicken heroes on homemade pitas, and tacos, fish, chicken, or beef. It actually started out as a hero stand, but I added all those other items along the way. Presently, my hours are 8 o'clock in the morning to whenever. But, like I mentioned, staying open late would guarantee more sales. And the monthly cost to operate right now? It's around $1,000 a month, including labor, utilities, rent, everything. And who are my clients now? Mostly gringos and the occasional Managuan from the capital. And the location, like I said, right on the main strip, two blocks off the beach, but located right in the middle of town, just down the street from the only bar and entertainment joint that's open late into the night. Now, get this. If I were there full-time, I could turn this place around without a doubt. But being so far away, the place has no real personality, creativity, or English speakers on site. I have another friend down there who has several restaurants in town, and I'm sure he'd act as a consultant for a small fee until the new owner gets on their feet and gets their bearings, if that's what it takes. Thanks much, Johnny. Brandon. Okay, let me just say that I know Brandon, and he's a very nice, honest guy. And you know, of course, he's committed the biggest mistake in the bar and restaurant business, and that is, he's not there all the time. And from what I can see, this is a great deal. Because let me tell you a little secret. He told me the place is breaking even with him not even being there. I guarantee the new owner will make an instant profit just by being there, using no gringo tricks at all. He says his employees are 100% loyal, but I know Latins, and they're only 100% loyal when the boss is there.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. You know.